The scene is this. It's 1964 in the deep forests of Northern California. Three hunters are out in the woods. One of them gets separated and lost. He decides to climb up a tree to spend a long, cold night protected, though, there from other predators. And then a light appears. We're going to back up just a little bit and get Donald Shrum's description of the appearance of this thing that he described as a mothership. Dan, if you will.
I saw a light. It looked like a lantern going up and down a trail. But then it came over the top of a tree, and I got kind of excited then because I thought it was a helicopter from the Forest Service. I stood between two of the fires that I built on the rocks and waved my arms and yelled and screamed. And finally, that light started coming towards me. So I was really relieved then because I thought it was a helicopter still. But it just stood, hovered there with no sound. So then I panicked because I knew it was no helicopter. I thought it was something from outer space. But it looked like all I could see is a little, about an 8-inch glow. So I thought it was just a little tiny flying saucer. And then I kind of panicked and I threw my bow up in the tree again and hand walked out there, that limb, and got up in the tree. And I had all camouflage clothing on, so I figured, well, they won't see me here, you know. But then this light went a half circle around me over the canyon. Then I could see the shadow of the whole spacecraft. And it was, that was just a light that was on the nose of it.
Noe, if you would, help provide some context here. I mean, we at the time, 1964, we don't have the familiarity with UFO stories and abduction scenarios, things of that sort. This was really foreign and alien at the time, right?
Yes, this is a very early major UFO case, and it was looked into by the civilian UFO organizations of the time, the Aerial Phenomenos Research Organization, Jim and Coral Lorenzen.
Oh, we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
And many others. But you're right. This was one of the earliest, and it's right up there in terms of significance with the Barney and Betty Hill abduction of the same time period. One of the reasons that this was not covered as extensively as Barney and Betty Hill was the fact that Mr. Shrum was hesitant because of the fact that he worked for the missile defense contractor. He was hesitant to give his true identity, and in fact, he was hesitant to go public with his story. As you may have noticed in listening to some of the audio clips, he's kind of a shy and reserved individual. The farthest thing from his mind is seeking publicity for himself. It's only because now he feels that this is a story that has to go out in public. He'd like to know, even to this day, he's affected by the experience that he underwent that evening, this 12-hour struggle that he had against these forces that to this day he doesn't understand. So he'd like to know more about what he went through, and he'd like for people to hear what happened to him. So that's the reason that he's finally speaking out in this new book.
And Ruben, we're going to now jump into some of the subsequent events, but it as a precursor to that, when you describe what had happened, the aliens there are landing, they're running around in the bushes looking at rocks and plants. And then they discover him. It was not like they were there to get him or to grab a human. It was just sort of an incidental, like a bonus for them.
Exactly. What he noticed was that the two small humanoids then began climbing, or then began walking right up to the tree and started looking at him. And they started to climb up the tree. And that's when Don realized, he said, that he better do something, or that he was there. He didn't know what the motive was, but he sure didn't want to get captured by these two beings.
Okay, tell me what happened.
Well, what happened was these two beings were trying to climb up the tree, and he immediately started to throw things at them. He threw coins, he threw a canteen at them. He had matches he had a number of matchbooks, and he started to light them on fire. He started breaking branches. And then he started to move the tree, sway it back and forth. And then immediately those beings would climb down. They were trying to climb up on each other, trying to get them, and they would immediately back away from the tree. And then they would come back again, and then try to grab them. Well, then out of the bushes, he noticed another being walking toward the tree. Only what he noticed was that the eyes were like fiery orange color. And this this being, or as it turned out, what he described was a little bit bigger than the other two. And it was basically more of a robot-like creature. What happened was that the robot opened its mouth, and it started to emit this vapor. And this vapor would start going up the tree, and it would start to it would knock him out temporarily. He almost fell down to the ground. And his boat kept him from falling. So he immediately climbed up further up the tree, and he tied himself to the tree. And there comes back the aliens. They went climbing back up the tree again, and he would start swooing the tree back and forth. And again, they would back up. And so this went on throughout for a long time. And the robot would come back, emit another gas vapor up, and trying to knock him out. Finally, he decided that he ran. You know, after getting rid of all his clothing, his hat, and his gear, what he had remaining was his three arrows. So he immediately started to shoot at the robot. He did not want to shoot at the two humanoids. He felt that they weren't there. He felt that they weren't causing any major harm to him. But it was this robot, and so he fired at the robot, and the arrow, the velocity was like that of a bullet. It would hit the robot, and the robot creature would basically back up for about a couple of feet, and then he would go back to the up the tree and try to gas him again. So this went on, and then we had another extraordinary event that happened later on, and perhaps Noe would like to jump in onto that because.
Why don't we wait a second? Let's hear a little bit more audio from Mr. Shrum, where it's cut number 12, where he discussed this gassing episode, where these robots put this gas that comes out of their mouth, kind of like a steam vapor, and the effects it has on him. Number 12.
Yeah, that was really really unusual.
These two humanoids stepped back from the tree, and another robot came, and there was two. About the same place that the two humanoids were, and they stood facing each other, and flames, just like lightning, came between them. Then the gas was so thick coming up the tree that it dissipated just about the time I got to me. But then that's when I'd start to gas for air, and then when I woke up from that, it was light, but the sun hadn't come up yet. I was just hanging by my belt, and they were gone.
Noe, you've developed sort of some theories about what kind of gas that might have been.
Yes, Reuben and I did some research into the, you know, what types of gases would cause a person to suffocate. And, of course, the most obvious answer is some type of asphyxiant. The typical asphyxiants that we think of would be like nitrogen or helium or argon. These are gases that when they are released into the area where a human being is, what they cause all of the oxygen content in the surrounding air to be lowered, and so the person then suffers the effects of a lack of oxygen. And while it's not toxic and doesn't do any damage in a general sense, it can be lethal in the sense that it can actually suffocate a person if enough of this asphyxiant gas gets introduced into an environment, you know, where humans are. They could possibly suffocate. But in Shrum's case, there was limited exposure to this until the very end of his struggles. Earlier in the evening, he had been exposed to just small amounts of this asphyxiant, which caused him to pass out just for a few moments. And he knows, he's told us several times that he wasn't out for very long during the initial gassing episodes, because when he would wake back up, he would see that the humanoids were trying to climb the tree again, and they would never quite get far enough up close to him before he would wake up. So that's how he knew that that he wasn't blacked out for very long. But then at the end, the audio clip that we just heard, at the very end of this night-long battle with these strange forces, the two robots got together. There was this lightning-like spark that flew between the two creatures, and then a huge volume of this asphyxiant went up into the tree above them, and that totally knocked Mr. Shrum out.